there's danger everywhere. But danger had never looked quite like this before.
Can you keep a secret?
Based on shocking true events.
This girl, Rena Virk, she's been missing for 3 days.
Emmy Award nominee Riley Keough.
Young girls were the ones we were supposed to protect.
Academy Award nominee Lily Gladstone.
Can't be.
Not be protected from.
A Hulu original series, Under the Bridge. Now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays only on Hulu.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Another steep, snowy mountain road in Ukraine.
Whoa, big hole. Watch out.
But this time, there was nothing to fear on the other side.
Hi, Maria! We did it!
Before meeting with Father Abbot Gregory Wendt and Petro Tarenta, Paula and I made a whirlwind visit to see the Kofels at Mike's childhood home in Verkhovina Bystra.
No.
Wow. Tell her it smells so good in here.
It was truly a whirlwind. We couldn't stay long, but in that time, Maria and Yuri buzzed around like two excited bees, showing us literally everything. Their cows and chickens, their farming tools, Mike's old sled, the dog.
What's the dog's name again?
Farsi.
Yuri, what are you doing?
We talked so much and so fast, I was worried our translator, Yulia, was going to explode.
The house wasn't too different from what the investigators who visited 20 years ago saw. Maybe the biggest difference was now they had a bathroom inside. They did have a lot of Byzantine images on the walls, but also photos of Mike when he was a kid. Between the framed pictures, we noticed they even had two photos of Paula, Mike, and me from some of our prison visits.
At one point, Yuri came zooming into the living room with an old VHS tape. And he popped it into the VCR under their little color TV. It went staticky and black. Then, pixelated white letters flashed on the screen. It said, "Graduation."
Sister Marie and Sister Michelle!
It was Mike's high school commencement ceremony from Holy Cross, and we stood around and watched as so many of the people we've talked about through the years came gliding down the aisle.
Father Damien. There comes the Pope.
The last person in the procession was Father Wendt. He walked through the auditorium door in a wide black robe with two huge white crosses on the sides. Seeing him on the video snapped me back into reality. Not long from now, the man on the screen would walk through a different door and reopen his own past. I'm Paula Barros.
And I'm Melanie Bartley.
And this is Sacred Scandal.
But you would understand why we want your voice on here saying
you get it,
that
right?
Is not
you
true.
You get it. I came up on this hill to hear your version of the story. You know what I mean?
I was going to ask you a question because you talk about the aftermath.
Yeah.
When is the aftermath and when does it start? When does it end?
Well, on the way to the bridge. There's no big bridges.
We're almost at the bridge where Pedro will be waiting for us.
After leaving the Kofels, we drove back toward Uzhgorod to drop off our translator, Yulia, and meet up with Petro, who would lead us to the monastery.
I'm scared that I might do something wrong and upset him, but I really just want to get to ask him the questions, you know?
Yeah, I think this is him.
2 days after our first visit there, all the snow already melted. So the impassable hill was a little easier to drive up.
Yeah, this looks a lot less threatening.
Yeah.
It's a lot less The Shining.
When we got to the top, we were amazed by what we saw. It was a huge fenced-in clearing in the forest. In the far back corner, the new monastery with its gold domed top loomed over everything.
This is so cool!
God damn it.
Before the interview, Petro let us take a look around the monastery. And being inside was a little emotional for me.
The skeleton there, you know, the remains is from Adam. You know, the first God-created man.
The walls were covered with Byzantine iconography, like the ones that used to be in Holy Cross. The ones that Paula and I saw were painted over just a few weeks before coming here.
Do you have a church in Weaverville also, like this?
We do, but it doesn't have any iconography. Well, first we had moved it to there.
But Petro said they weren't painted over. These were the same murals from my school. They had them cut off the walls, packed into a container ship, and sent all the way across Europe to this new monastery. I was stunned to see those same images I used to look at every day, so far from Miami.
We thought it was painted over.
Yeah, I can't believe this is possible.
And here it is.
It's amazing.
It's not finished yet. You know, the outside has been decorated and painted. This is like a rough job.
After a few minutes at the monastery, Petro walked us across the grounds to a small cabin that they use for gatherings after Sunday services. Then he left to get Father Wendt.
We came here searching for their perspective. When we first entered the cabin, we had no idea we'd be leaving a few hours later, feeling like we just heard an entirely different story than the one we thought we knew.
Paula and I sat next to each other on one side of a table in the middle of the room. Then we waited for Petro to come back with Father Wendt.
Do you kiss their hand?
No, don't do that.
Do you see the sweat on my hands?
I feel it.
Literally.
You got it. You're amazing.
I love you.
You're smart.
Let's be out here in an hour, please.
Father Abbott, hi.
When he came in, he wasn't wearing the long black robe and tall hat I always remembered him in, but a black leather jacket. He was definitely still the tallest person in the room, but felt older than the last time I saw him. And Petro had to drive him over to the cabin, which was only a few meters away from their house. A huge part of me felt bad seeing him so much frailer than the image I had in my mind. And as a former student of Holy Cross, I felt guilty during the whole interview for bringing all of this tragedy back into both of their lives. And listening back to the recording a few weeks later, I feel like I sound way more agreeable with them than I should have been that day.
He's in his late 70s, and we didn't know what to be prepared for. Petro told us that Father Wendt's memory isn't always the best these days, so he might not remember every detail we were after.
Yeah. Maybe like not in the middle of it. Sit in. Okay. I'd love it if you were in
here. Petro took a seat on a small sofa off against the wall, and Father Wendt sat alone directly across from Paula and me. Sitting here like this, it kind of felt like an interrogation. I couldn't help but think of how we probably looked like the attorneys, Gay Levine and Edith Georgie, when they sat together across from the priests and heard nothing but the Fifth Amendment for hours.
And at first, we wondered if things might be on that same strange course. Even though we already talked about the details of the interview for an hour earlier that day, we spent nearly the first 20 minutes of this conversation trying to navigate what would be on the record and renegotiating everything with Father Wendt.
That what you said is true, with a caveat that I get to say that I don't want this going in or whatever after we get farther along. You know, you thought we could be doing something good. I'm very much for anything that's good.
Keep in mind that over the last few days, we only ever communicated with Petro. Father Wendt read but never replied to our texts, and even called us through Petro's phone. By now, Petro felt kind of like the priest's handler.
Also, and again through Petro, Father Wendt asked for a list of questions that we might ask, which we shared. But it was clear when we spoke to him in person that he wasn't just drifting along in the background. He was getting ready to talk to us and preparing his responses. Other conversations were happening before we got there, too.
Well, I spoke to Father Damien this afternoon.
You did?
Yeah, he was very interested to hear what you were doing.
Really? What did he say? I'm so curious.
I think he would have liked to have been here.
But, I mean, I would love to interview him. Do you think he would let me?
Probably not, because he doesn't like us. Oh, it's good that it's you. I don't like it. I'm not the one that likes,
really?
You know, interviewing. But I think he more or less came to the decision, if it's one of us, it's you.
And once we did actually get the interview started, we were still worried how it might go. What felt like some of the simplest questions had the most complicated answers.
I would love an introduction. State your name, please, for me, and who you are in relation to Holy Cross.
Holy Cross doesn't exist any longer.
Who you were in relation to Holy Cross.
Oh, who I was. My name is probably the most difficult on them of answers, because we were not simply priests, and we were not simply monks, but we were monk priests as such.
This aside about ecclesiastical titles went on for about a solid minute until he made his point. And even that response felt like he was maybe preempting later questions about his own titles.
I never became a bishop, but almost all of the other positions at some point or another I legitimately held.
So
getting back to what my name is, or what would you like to call me tonight?
I want to know what you would like to be called.
The name that was originally given to me by the bishop was Gregory.
Okay, and your relation to Holy Cross back then, what was it?
I was the founder, and as long as we used the title headmaster, then it was me.
Sometimes Father Wendt would answer our questions. Sometimes he refused. Then, other times the priest would go on long tangents where it felt like he was trying to get Melanie and me to forget what we asked in the first place. As we talked, Petro would jump in to help fill the gaps. And we went on like this into the evening for the next few hours. We'd cover the eparchy investigation, the sex abuse allegations, and Sister Michelle's murder. And he'd tell us aspects of this case that we'd never heard before. We'll pick up our interview after a break.
Hola, ¿qué tal? This is Cheekies from the Cheekies and Chill podcast. For whatever reason, or absolutely no reason at all, sometimes we all just need some time to turn off and get away. A lot of times on the My Cultura podcast network, our storytellers share their adventures and tips for living our best lives. And why not? With the Delta Sky Miles Platinum American Express card, you can easily check off all those dreamy destinations, como la playa que viste en ese show, or climbing that mountain on your screensaver. I see you. No matter what kind of traveler you are, and no matter the reason, the Delta Sky Miles Platinum American Express card is the way to go. If you travel, you know.
Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Welcome back to Sacred Scandal.
When we started talking with Father Wendt and Petro, we didn't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. We worried they might kick us out if we immediately jumped into the difficult stuff. So we started simple with Holy Cross and how the idea came to start a religious school.
It was basically where I started you out with. First, I wanted something that was serious about our religion. Saying our religion, I'm talking about the Catholic system, whether it's Eastern, Western, I don't care. Mm-hmm. But it was, that's how I grew up. So that was the thing. I wanted something serious about religion. Why? If religion isn't serious, what do we have? So that's why I was serious, because I said, this is serious. I've always heard it serious. My mother said it was serious. Mm-hmm. My father said it was serious. So, that's the reason for religious. And the thing is, I was always attracted, you know, to learning. I was very happy. Most of the kids were screaming and yelling that they had to learn Latin. I was very happy learning Latin.
I thank God for it every day.
I thought it was always a help to us that we were plugged in to the local school system, not meaning the law, but the Catholic schools and which, you know, some of them are diocesan under a bishop,
yes, yes.
And some of them are not ever under a bishop, and so forth. So that there's the sort of the structures of how they, you know.
So was Holy Cross Academy and Monastery under a bishop?
Well, yes and no. Okay, so as soon as we were established as a monastery, then that, once you're talking about a monastery that actually exists, then there's certain things the bishop has no right trying to do over there, that sort of thing. So monasteries are usually run by monks. And if you have a diocesan priest who knows nothing about monks, he's not going to be too helpful, at best.
Mm-hmm. So when you founded Holy Cross Academy and Monastery, as far as I understand, you were under the jurisdiction of the Eparchy of Passaic, New Jersey. Is that correct?
I'm not going to touch your answer because it's fine for where we want.
That's fine. That's
okay. So. Though he gave unclear answers about Holy Cross's status within the Byzantine Catholic Church, Father Wendt was more than happy to talk about Bishop Andrew Pataki, who started the investigation into the school and monastery.
And we had a really incredible bishop at one point, Andrew Pataki. I don't know if you've read any.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Dear old Andrew. Anyway, I don't want to get a bash Andrew session because it Sister Michelle and I fell into that too easily. Sister Michelle was not buying any of what Andrew Pataki was trying to sell, shove, you know, what you fill in your own verbs. She didn't have any interest in him from the get-go, and he pretty much sensed that's where it stood. But before it really all got bad, let me back me up to that one because you should hear. Pataki was going to come, what they call visitation, and basically Sister Michelle got me in a corner and said, you are going to have to see to it that I don't punch him in the face. It's your job that he doesn't leave this place, you know, boom, two black eyes. I count it as one of my great errors of my life that when Pataki was ordained a bishop, I had an invitation to go to the Holy Land. And I could either go to the Holy Land or I could go to Pataki's, you know,
enthronement.
Yeah. Yeah, this is called an enthronement, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's very fitting. That's, so that's the thing. I went to the enthronement. I never regretted it more, and I never got to go to the Holy Land.
As he went on about Pataki, we didn't even have to ask Father Wendt why he disliked the bishop so much.
It's May I tell you the question everyone would really want to know, but you're not asking? What was Pataki interested in? Was he interested in Holy Cross as Holy Cross? Heck no. What would he like to have seen? Me fail. Mm-hmm. So at any rate, when when he would get his ideas, it was immediately obvious to me what he was going for. He wanted me out of there, and that while I was gone, the school could be foreclosed on by the diocese, you know, specifically him, the diocesan bishop, because they wanted all the money.
They wanted the money. And so that's why he wrote that letter to the Vatican that later, you know, just...
It wasn't even that good. Did you hear this part from someone else, a friend of a friend? Or...
We asked if he knew the Vatican's verdict on Bishop Pataki's suggestions, and he didn't really answer the question. But he said the result was clear.
But the point is, Pataki, you know, received responses. Did I get thrown out? Did he get what he wanted? No.
And what is the process if you want to switch from the Byzantine Catholic Church to the OCA, as you guys did? How
we
do you
did
go
that,
about
so
that?
I can t-
How did you go about that? What was the process?
Yeah,
was
it a long process? Is it difficult? Is it?
Well, first of all, you have to get acquainted with what is the Orthodox system of worship. So you have to go through all these things, which are only common sense.
No, I was just going to say that we were practicing the Orthodox way in the Catholic Church. That's what it was. That's why we were Byzantine. We were practicing the Orthodox way in the Catholic Church, because that's a branch of Catholic Church, Eastern branch. That's why when we became Orthodox, when the Orthodox bishop came to receive us in Miami, he saw that our church, the iconography was there, not the statues, because that's one of the major differences between the two churches, you know. The iconography is there, the music is very similar, the garments that the monks wear are the same. You know, the bishop said, you don't have to change anything. You don't have to adapt. You're already practicing it.
And so you had a good relationship with the bishop, with everyone.
Yes, and with the other bishops of the Orthodox Church in America.
We heard that there was a little scandal within the OCA that Metropolitan Herman and Kondratik were accused of financial misconduct.
Let's break it down to the simple money.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Kondratik learned how to steal money. You know, Herman was apparently, I like him, let me let you know which side I'm on, I like him, but he didn't, apparently didn't keep enough oversight.
We brought up their next move from the OCA to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, but they made it seem as if the OCA's investigation and their switch was just a coincidence.
They bought this land in Ukraine years earlier, and always planned to come here to build a monastery in the Carpathian Mountains and the medical center in Uzhgorod. Leaving the OCA was simply part of realizing that goal.
So then you left the OCA at some point, right?
We left because we came here.
Oh.
Right. It's like really changing jurisdiction, basically.
Yeah, we got permission from the OCA to travel to the Orthodox bishop over here that would be able to receive us.
Now, almost 10 years after coming to Ukraine,
things changed again. Even though the money they got from selling off Holy Cross would go farther here, it would not last forever.
It sounded like the medical center never got steady business, and they needed funds to buy supplies and to maintain hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. It was expensive, and in the end, it didn't work out. Now, the monk Vasil and Father Damien were back in North Carolina, working in a grocery store to help them get by.
I heard, I think we talked about this yesterday, that they both had to get jobs. They have to work now.
Since they got back.
Why is that? Why did they have to get jobs?
No money. That's the one reason we went back. Because in America, you can make real money with real work. It doesn't go that way here. Sometimes it does. You know. And we're at the point where, you know, either we come to find some legitimate way of bringing in, you know, means to support not just ourselves, but you have America going on, you have Vorochevo going on, you have the hospital in Ushuaia. Did you see it?
We did. We drove by it. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And that's most of our life's work.
Their life's work includes two monasteries and a small hospital. But it was the first dream that they were a part of, Holy Cross Academy, that could have gone so differently.
No, I just kind of want to know, like, yeah, like, did that affect you guys? Like, did that make you?
It was a success. Everybody knows that. And I think if we didn't have this incident, we might still have had the school to this day. And I think our lives might have turned out very different. I think I might have, we probably would still have been there. Right?
It's possible, yeah. It's possible we'd still been there. In Miami.
Coming up after a break, we get their side on Sister Michelle's murder and everything that happened after. Stay with us.
Hola, ¿qué tal? This is Cheekies from the Cheekies and Chill podcast. For whatever reason, or absolutely no reason at all, sometimes we all just need some time to turn off and get away. A lot of times on the My Cultura podcast network, our storytellers share their adventures and tips for living our best lives. And why not? With the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you can easily check off all those dreamy destinations, como la playa que viste en ese show, or climbing that mountain on your screensaver. I see you. No matter what kind of traveler you are, and no matter the reason, the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card is the way to go. If you travel, you know.
Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Welcome back to Sacred Scandal. I'm Paula Barros.
And I'm Melanie Bartley.
Like the lawyers 20 years ago who investigated the sexual abuse allegations, we were curious why the priests from Holy Cross recruited 14 and 15-year-old boys instead of adults, and why they had to go all the way to Ukraine to get them.
Father Wendt and Petro told us that bringing over teenage recruits was not the initial plan, but was the one that seemed to work out best at the time.
I wanted to clarify also about, because you had, you, why Ukraine, why Canadians from Ukraine, another important thing that people might want to know. You guys tried to have American people there, right? And it just never worked out.
Yes,
you didn't have good candidates. You said that, you know, also people came, they tried and they left, you know, like there was nobody that would stick on, you know, and that's why since they knew about Ukraine, they knew people were more religious here, that there was more chance to find somebody that would be there for a long time. That was the idea why Father Gregory came to Ukraine to search.
The first group I had were all adult adolescents. The embassy would say, you're just trying to import people for work, you know, some of our work group. I said, no, no. And that's how it happened. Because the U.S. Embassy told me, go in this direction and we'll see if we can get you some in America.
So the embassy was basically saying that they had to be younger for them to facilitate
the older their... older ones can be looking for jobs on Miami Beach.
And getting younger monk candidates who could also attend Holy Cross Academy made their paperwork even simpler.
That would be the easiest thing. And if you remember, what was our second line of work? School. So we could write the visas ourselves.
Petro's story of becoming a candidate was pretty different to Mike's. He told us that he met Father Wendt the winter before coming to Miami and spent almost 6 months in the candidate's house in Ukraine. Mike was only there for 1 month before moving to Florida. Back then, they both said Mike was kind of quiet and kept to himself. So much so that Petro had no memory of Mike ever being at the candidate's house.
Father Wendt didn't really remember Mike's short month at the house in Ukraine either. But we asked if they would have noticed any red flags about Mike if he had spent more than just a few weeks at the training house.
I'm trying to be honest and not going backwards. At that point, I didn't see any red flags. And it was very interesting because later on when this case developed into more of a case and all of this business that, you know, it became interesting to see when did these things start actually having meaning, you know? When does being a kind of quiet person start to mean some kind of an unhealthily quiet person?
Father Wendt also told us that it wasn't him who suggested Mike should come to Miami.
I didn't pick him. I could tell you it was, I came to Zacapacha the first time with two priests. One was a Jesuit, and the other one, excuse me, this was a Jesuit's father. He was not a priest. And they basically took me all over, and the father could speak everything they speak over here, Hungarian, blah, 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 go down the list. And the priest's father that spoke all those languages, you know, he said, oh, take this little small one.
Take the little one.
Oh. I talked to him later. I said, remember the little small one? I said, was it mine? Because I was accused of that by Gail Levine and one of her brilliant brainstorms. He picked this one up. You know, he was gearing from when they were in Zacapacha. I said, remember who picked this one out? We got a chuckle out of it.
Almost 5 years after starting the program, Father Wendt started to think Mike may not be a good fit for the monastery after all. He said around then, the monastic candidate's personality started to change.
I began seeing him as not fitting in with the other students. They were, you know, we had a nice school. The kids were nice. You were there. No one was strangling another student in the hallway. And, you know, I'd go, I'm saying hello, the people saying, oh, I get to Mikhailo. Doesn't even say hello. Everyone in the hall is being very polite, and he's like, eh. You know, this is how he's treating me. And I had no affair or anything, what is, you could in any way, you know, jimmied around to have something to do with why he is not saying good afternoon. You know, as if hardly would take anything out, and even in a worse day.
So did you think about that in retrospect, like after the murder, or did you remember noticing that before?
I was complaining about him. I wanted to send him back. That's point blank. Okay. Said he was not what I started this about at this point when he's acting like that. Like I'm the enemy, you know, we set that us, we brought him over, and, you know, this was, he didn't fit in with the other students.
Father Wendt said he talked to Father Damien about sending Mike home because of his attitude, but it never happened. Before they could send him back, Sister Michelle was dead, and Mike confessed to killing her.
The day of the murder was difficult for both of them. They were the only two from Holy Cross to see what Mike had done to Sister Michelle.
Petro, who was 21 at the time, was the one who first found her body.
When I opened the door, I saw something was terribly wrong. You know, I saw part of her body, I saw lots of blood. What I remember was that she was like lying behind the bed. So I only could see like, you know, like half of her legs sticking out, and I saw a big cut on the thigh. And so as soon as I got out of the house, I ran as fast as I could to tell him. And I said, something is bad. I don't think Sister Michelle is alive. And he immediately called 911 without thinking about it. So, and that's when the police came and fire rescue and the ambulance.
And then I had to go back over with them because I wanted me to...
So you went to the crime scene. You were at the crime scene.
Yeah.
Did you think it was part of like a burglary or something like
that? Not really burglary, because there was not much to steal, but who knows, some kind of like a drug addict breaking in or, you know, something like that.
I did think there was a nursery in front of our property. And so I told the police, I said, that's the only thing that comes to my mind otherwise.
So you never imagined at first that it was one of you?
No way, no.
It was literally the last thing I would think of. You want to know what I personally feel guilty about? I feel guilty that I let Sister Michelle down. Because, you know, I knew her situation. You have fences everywhere. So the police show up, what do I report? There are some migrant workers on the end. That's really, I'm saying, what else could happen here?
Father Wendt was often accused of seeming unemotional after the murder. People we talked to thought his tone sounded unconcerned on the 911 call, or that he didn't seem sad during Sister Michelle's memorial. But he says he was dealing with things in his own way.
I had a lot of different emotions at different points. Times. I can't say I had the expected emotion at this time. We, of course, are always told, as part of our training, to keep the stiff upper lip. And finally, one morning, I completely broke down. It was the lower school. And that was it. By the time we were at the liturgy, you know, for Sister Michelle's repose, and for the school, I didn't break down. And some people thought, see, he's not moved. I said, well, first of all, I'm not there to give a show and have people say, oh, look how moved he was. No, it's a different place.
Is that something that sticks with you forever?
Yes, but it's, you know, I feel it sounds a little strange what I'm going to say, but I hope you're taking it the right way. I had a good relationship with Sister Michelle. And, you know, like, to me, I would talk to her about it, how awful it was and how sorry we were that this happened to her.
So you would pray to her and sort of speak through prayer with her?
Through prayer and not, you know, she didn't answer back.
Petra, did you need therapy?
No. You know, as soon as that happened, you know, there was a lot of questioning by police, by different departments, by this and that. Everything kind of like, there was so much going on that there was no time to think about what you saw or...
You needed therapy from the police.
This idea that the police and other investigators were a problem for Holy Cross was something that came up a lot during this interview. You might have noticed Father Wendt already mentioned Assistant State Attorney Gail Levine a few times.
And he talked more about it when we brought up their legal strategy during the sex abuse investigation.
The legal strategy was, with the sex abuse stuff, was plead the fifth, like just don't talk and you're going to be fine, right? Because there's no evidence, there's no nothing, so...
To tell you the truth, most of it was just procedural by this. It's not like I was feeling, okay, don't wink thrice or you lost the war. You know, heck, I don't know what the war was by the end of this. The point is, I felt the attorneys did a very good job. After a few of the meetings that I went to of the defense attorneys, what's Gail Levine's club?
Prosecutors.
I was to those meetings, and when I heard what they had to say about Gail Levine, I thought, oh, it wasn't too bad for me. She was a horrible person, basically.
Why do you say she was a horrible person? What did she do?
Only my experience, and I'm not God. I'm not trying to say what I said, you know. Trust me, when you get to heaven, St. Peter will say, Gail Levine is a horrible person. I might be totally wrong about her, but it's certainly my experience.
When we pushed them on this, it was clear that both Father Wendt and Petro had a grudge against Gail Levine. They thought she was taking the side of lead defense attorney Edith Georgie.
In doing that, they felt she was helping to perpetuate an image of the priests as child predators without any evidence other than Mike's allegations. And that put the monastic candidates and their families through even more trauma.
Even though they were opposing parties in the court, Edith Georgie and Levine, but they kind of like ganged up on this idea of possible abuse and all that, they worked together on that. They were like scrutinizing us. They sent different kind of police departments to talk to us, psychologists, and wanted to find any kind of thing they could find, any kind of, to confirm this, you know. She was here in Ukraine too. She talked to Mikhail's parents. She talked to all of the parents' candidates, trying to find if somebody said anything or did they see anything, you know. And she would lie to their face. She would say horrible things about us. And I mean, not to us, but to our parents, because we're in the States, that we abused there and stuff like that, that it was intentional. Your kids are going through terrible stuff. They were brought up with prostitution. And I remember I was told that it was Josip Lembach's mother who told her that, we don't believe anything you're saying, and you yourself must not have kids, because if you had, you would not be talking like this to us. And that's when she basically didn't ask anymore. So
that shut her down.
Yeah, that shut her down, basically.
We asked them about the story that all the police and lawyers told us about the day of Mike's confession. We brought up the moment they say Father Wendt, Petro, and a lawyer showed up at the homicide department and started asking if Mike was saying anything bad about the school.
That's not true.
No.
Do you remember who you talked to when you went?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so, I remember.
Who was
it? Detective Nanny. No, I definitely can say that I was there with him, and there would have been no reason for him to ask that. We were concerned about Mikhail by himself at that time, you know, because, you know, he was a responsible party for him. We had to find out what's going on, you know, because obviously, you know, he could have been wrongfully arrested if it wasn't him, for example, who did that, so...
That first phone call that you got from Mihailo, from his first, the only call he's allowed to make, the call he makes to you, what was that like for you to pick up that phone and speak to him? Was he remorseful? Was he scared? What was...
Is he a relative of yours? Okay, that's more. No, he was not remorseful. I mean, you know, you're talking about this horrible thing. There was no, you know, facade there. In the good or bad sense of the word, there was...
Like talking like a matter of fact, you know,
Did you ask him why did you do this?
Yes. Well, first of all, he is not the one that told me. The police told me. I don't know what he was going to say. He wasn't opening with anything. So I said, I heard from the police that you killed Sister Michelle. And I'm trying to think, what was the next? Do you remember?
Yeah, you told me, because I wasn't there when you spoke to him, but you told me that he was very flat, matter of fact. And you asked him, why did you do it? And
he didn't want to kill her. He wanted to hurt her.
Right.
Did he ask you for help?
No. You know, I said, I have heard that the public defender's office, you know, can give you very good assistance, but if not, let me know. Never heard from him again.
Mike's told us that he never reached out to Holy Cross again because after he opened up about the sexual abuse, he no longer wanted anything to do with the priests. But we always wondered why Fathers Went or Damien never tried to talk to Mike again either.
Father Went told us that after the sexual assault allegations were made, talking to Mike no longer felt like it was possible.
What category was I in?
In
the enemy. Whether or not I was, ever would be, or what, how things fell out in the universe. At that point in time, I couldn't contact anybody that was possibly on the other side.
Couldn't, meaning weren't allowed? Yeah, right.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
When your attorneys give you advice, you can do whatever you want. They never say don't do, you know.
What kept you from, I guess, 20 years later, reaching out to Mihailo's parents?
Well, I didn't speak Ukrainian. Oh. And the candidate, vis-a-vis these parents, corresponded. And I would be there, and they would ask and translate and that sort of thing. But that's, you know, I never called any of the parents by myself.
But in this particular situation where, you know, these two parents who are in this little tiny village, you know, and their son is in a prison and they don't know what the son, I mean, they know that the son did something and that he's saying a bunch of stuff and any of that. Did you ever feel like, okay, maybe I need to sit down and talk to these folks and just kind of, you know, I
have a very positive feeling from them from when I first got to know them. And so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. At this point, would I have felt comfortable or even able to do any of this? No. Mm-hmm. I'm not never in contact with them alone. It's always, you know, Mikhailo is doing da 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 da, and that's how we get in contact with. Why don't you talk? You would do a lot of this sort of thing.
Well, at the time we communicated through letters. You know, he would write them letters, they'd write him letters.
This is before the murder? This right, is just right.
An... Are you talking
yeah,
about after?
Yeah, I'm talking about after, Petro. Like, well, did you ever talk to them? Did you ever how did this boy become what he became? Or do you have any conversations about any of it with his parents who are just that tiny little town? Like, just...
You have to understand that it was a bombshell for all of us. And this thing is not like... Okay, the murder happened, then a week later, you know, things cleared, and a month later we were all like, we can do whatever we want. This thing took years, and there was a lot of investigation, there's a lot of people, a lot of things going on, that there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
And besides, we couldn't leave at that time, you know, because it was an ongoing investigation. We couldn't, we were told we can't leave the United States, you have to be here and stuff. So there was basically no... And I don't think they had a phone at home at that time that you could call.
Yeah.
Well, besides the actual hit on us psychologically and emotionally, that this took place, that we lost two members at the same time and one killed each other, you know. Besides that effect, again, personally, we had to deal with a lot of other stuff going on. We had to think about ways how to save the school because, as you know, we had a drop in student population. And so we had to, that also took a lot of our attention. In the meantime, this thing took years that we had to speak to different attorneys, to different kinds of police, even child abuse police and all that. So, and kind of lost my track.
After talking to Father Wendt and Petro for a few hours, we still hadn't asked anything about the accusations of sexual abuse. To be honest, it wasn't on the list of questions we sent over either. We were afraid that if we put it on there, Father Wendt would never have agreed to talk to us in the first place. But it was getting late, and we could sense that we'd be wrapping things soon. Then, Melanie got brave and started asking what we'd been thinking about all of these years.
This is a hard question for me to ask, and I'm going to ask it. Did any of you ever feel that maybe he was telling the truth with Father Damien, that maybe there's a possibility, even the slightest possibility, that Father Damien was abusing Mihailo?
I would like to answer that, not exactly as you asked it.
Okay.
So when Mihailo turned 18, you know, he had been to Ukraine as Father Damien's translator. And I said, you're 18, you can go by yourselves, we'll get the plane, blah, blah, blah. And I said, now, sit down and tell me, what is your own view of Father Damien? Was everything, you know, between you and him the way you would want it to be? If not, what? Basically, I'm giving him open-ended questions. Feed me if there's anything wrong. Nothing was going on. We weren't being investigated by Gail Levine's cat. Nothing, you know, this is tabula rasa. And that's what I asked him, and he said, no, everything's fine.
Why would you ask him that?
Why not? If something was not right in your monastery, would you like to find out from the candidate's mother? I was not asking these questions because just think if anything... No, it was more innocent than that. But it was a type of thing I would always do. Did you have any problems?
I guess my question is, had you heard anything about Father Damien before that would lead you to ask Mihailo if anything inappropriate was happening?
Okay, so it was just like a preventative sort of like a routine measure to ask that question, questions like that to you.
A question like that, because it wasn't centered around sex. Anything between you and Gabal, it could be that, you know, he leaves his door open a crack and you wanted a foot. That was a totally open-ended question. It had no sex as an outcome.
Gotcha.
A, B, C, D, sex. Right. No, it wasn't like that. But
well,
it was for anything he wanted.
Another question that, I'm sorry, it's another uncomfortable one, but I need to ask it because we're here. And a lot of people would say that there was something suspicious going on between the two of you, because you said so yourself in the interrogation tapes that when you would travel together, that you would share a bed.
Share what?
A bed.
Who is doing this reporting?
We reminded them that in the perpetuated testimony from the monastic candidates, some of the boys, including Petro, said that these two shared rooms and sometimes beds in hotels.
You know, I don't remember what I said, but I mean, if we went on vacation, for example, you know, we used to rent a minivan and we would like be in the hotel room and we would like watch TV or something. We would like, you know, you would like, there's usually two beds in the hotel room, and you would just, we would like hang there, you know, us, the guys, and just, you know, sit
or
next to each other
or
like while you're watching TV, but nothing sexual or anything like
maybe
that.
Maybe you meant a room or not a bed or like just
it's
like...
I can't remember exactly what they said, but...
Do you mind if I interject a question?
Please.
Isn't the bottom of that question, however you want to form it, phrase it, whatever, were you ever a subject of pedophile activity?
No, I wasn't.
Isn't that what you want to know? Mm-hmm. How many other ways you could dance around, but that's the question you want answered. Were you abused? That's the question. Please write it down somewhere.
Before we wrap things up, we had one last thing we wanted to ask them. We knew that the murder and everything that happened after caused the downfall of Holy Cross and took away the world they built in Miami.
Even though they started over in North Carolina and rebuilt things here in Ukraine, it still felt like a huge loss, not just for them, but for everyone who cared about the school. We wanted to know if they could ever forgive Mike for killing Sister Michelle and setting off everything that brought Holy Cross down.
Jesus Christ said, unless you forgive your brother their sins, your sins will not be forgiven you. Those are not my words, but I live by them. You know, would I feel comfortable? That wasn't the question. If, you know, I'm waiting for St. Peter and Misha and I were there, and St. Peter said, oh, you asked the question this time. You know, there's nothing to ask. Do I forgive him? Yes. Am I happy about being put in that place? No. But I definitely do, from my heart, forgive him, because I know otherwise I'm not going to be forgiven either. Those are Jesus' words, and I take them seriously as much today as when I started.
Pedro?
I understand you, and I also live by the same principles, you know, but for me, well, I hope that God forgives, you know. That's my thing. But personally, I'm still very angry with him because he really did some terrible things. He undermined Father Gregory's great work. He touched a lot of lives in a negative way. You know, all the students, why we are here talking about this, a lot of students were hurt, a lot of parents were hurt, caused us to go through a lot of hardships. And I think changed the direction of our own personal lives, you know, by this terrible act. So I don't want to see him. And to forgive is not my thing. I just don't want to deal with his thing. I just hope God forgives him and that's it.
How do you feel about him getting out and coming back to this area?
He better not come around my way, that's what I'll say.
Father, how do you feel about it?
I mean, you will die sometime, I'm aware of that. If it's, his second go-around, basically I'm saying, it doesn't keep me up at night. Maybe it should, but it doesn't.
It was late when we finally packed up to leave the monastery. The light from the village in the valley below made the mountains glow against a cold, black sky. We loaded the car and started on that 4.5-hour drive back to Lviv. A drive that stretched to 5, and then 6 hours, and then more as we crept down slush-covered mountain highways in a near whiteout. Though we hardly noticed the danger of it all, because we had plenty to talk about.
Everything that Mike has told us has checked out. I don't think he's lied to us about anything.
I don't think we're ever going to know. Are those like military trucks?
Before we came to Ukraine, the Russian military was already starting to surround the border. People in the western part of the country seemed less bothered by the news, like it was just a problem for the eastern half of Ukraine.
We talked about the danger of an invasion before we arrived, and even had our own plan to walk across the border into Slovakia if it happened and we were trapped in a war zone. Now it's crazy to think that not long after we left, those soldiers have attacked Ukraine, and airstrikes hit not far from where we stayed in Lviv.
Since it all started, we've been keeping in touch with everyone we met, and we're hoping to share some updates with them later in the series. So keep listening for those, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Sacred Scandal. Sacred Scandal is a production of Exile Content Studio in partnership with iHeartRadio's My Cultura podcast network. Sacred Scandal was created and produced by Melanie Bartley and me, Paula Barros. Our senior producer is Dennis Funk of Written in Air. The executive producers are Rose Reed and Nando Villa. Production, mixing, and sound design by Helena DeGroot. Our production assistant is Imani Leonard. The show is fact-checked by Kimberly Winston. Original music and final audio mixing comes from Patrick Hart. And special thanks on this episode to Yulia Tarasuk and Travis Roig. If you'd like to reach out, email us at hello@sacredscandalpodcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at Sacred Scandal.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.